again, we were living in the city. We were living in Philadelphia. So we had no outdoor space. I had kind of lost my commune with nature. A big part of it, not just the surfing and the commune with water, was to just be back in nature, was to have space. Mm-hmm. You know, not that I didn't want any neighbors, but I wanted privacy again. Mm-hmm. I wanted to have my doors and windows open. I wanted trees. I wanted greenery.
What's going on, you guys? I'm John Chenault, and welcome to the Bitcoin Path Podcast. And this is a show where we have deeper conversations about Bitcoin and self-sovereignty, about how this new magic internet money is changing the world and changing ourselves at the same time. For this episode, I thought I'd do a little special episode. Jason and I are down here in Nicaragua visiting, checking out the area. Been surfing a little bit, just kind of adventuring, and I'm here with Michael. And Michael's a local and a really good friend of mine. A local now, and he's a U.S. Citizen still, right?
Yeah,
so since he's been down here in the area for a long period of time and interacted with a lot of other gringos and helped a lot of people transition into Nicaraguan life, I thought it'd be a really good chance for us to sit down and just talk a little bit about what life is like here in Nicaragua, and offer it as an introduction for you guys, as anyone who is kind of going into this, as we're going into this period of time of uncertainty, and we're looking at all the different, we want to have all the different options possible at our repertoire and know what is involved. So with that, Michael, can you introduce yourself?
And, absolutely. John, thanks for having me. My name is Michael Skiles. I've been living in Las Salinas, Tola, Nicaragua for 6 years. We just renewed our 5-year residency, so we're into our second stint here. We came as investors, meaning that our purchase allowed us to apply for residency, myself and my wife. We've since had a son here, so he's a Nicaraguan citizen, born here. He has a U.S. passport as well. And I moved here mostly because I wanted to surf more. I started surfing later in life and kind of reconnecting with the ocean, and was leading a great life in Philadelphia. Had a screen printing business there, but I was looking to change the direction of what I was doing. It was either like invest more heavily in being in the city and being in business, mm-hmm. or start a new path for myself. So
yeah,
we moved to Nicaragua.
That's quite the change.
It was a massive change. It took us about 2 years to fully realize it, to sell our house, liquidate our life there, and make the full jump. It happened a lot quicker than we expected. Some things just fell in place faster than others. So,
right.
Yeah.
So I remember you saying that there was a particular moment. There's kind of a moment in time, right, yeah, where things changed for you in the U.S. And would you mind opening up about that? Like,
our experience, we really loved Philadelphia, and we were both, my wife and I, thriving there, running our business, being part of the community there. But we were living in a neighborhood that some of the friends at the time would say that we were pioneering. We were some of the first people to go there outside of the general population, gentrify it. It was a sketchy South Philly neighborhood. We actually came back from a trip to Nicaragua, our first trip to Nicaragua. We got up to walk our dog early in the morning, and we pretty much encountered like what was about to be a knifing right at the corner at about 4:45, 5 in the morning. Wandered into two guys, one had just pulled a knife on another, and when we came around the corner with our giant pit bull mix, they froze. One looked at the other and said, "I know where the fuck you live." And then they parted ways, each in their own direction, like we had just stopped somebody from getting knifed, or a drug deal gone bad, or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. But really, just in that one moment, I don't think we were married just yet then, but I looked at Chevelle and I was like, what the hell are we still doing living here? It had run its course for herself. She is an expat, being that she came to the States as a nanny from Lithuania. She stayed for 13 years before we were together, and then moved here. So she was never fully comfortable in her skin there. She was ready for something different as well. That really prompted it. We were on the cusp of making decisions about how to grow our life, and Philadelphia was giving us signs that it wasn't going to be there.
Right. Right.
That was a key one. Just coming back from paradise to that. So.
Yeah. 100%. Here, let me grab that.
Yeah.
So that brings up kind of a blurring question in my mind, because, and just to kind of set this up, as I was sharing that I was going to Nicaragua with, you know, my parents and with some other people, you know, the thing that they go to, a lot of people go to, is that, oh, it's like really dangerous there. Right? And so to me, it's almost fascinating that, like, you know, the thing that spurred an inspiration to explore, open up a whole different lifestyle and a whole different life for you was, you know, this moment kind of like showed the violence, showed that it was sort of a tipping point for you, right? It's not like that one incident had
I will tell you, though, from my experience of being here for this amount of time as an expat, I still identify, of course, as an American, but I'm more and more shocked by the level of violence that we tolerate as Americans, and or that we're surprised by, that it's an inherently violent country, it's born of violence, and it permeates a lot of aspects of society, I feel like. And now, being a father, also a little bit older, being a father, I can't imagine going back to the States and having my son grow up there. I'm incredibly safe here as a as a person, as a family. We have to deal with a different kind of dangers of being isolated and having to be a little bit more self-sufficient, self-reliant. But I don't have a threat of imminent violence or danger in almost any situation that I've been in Nicaragua.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's fascinating. All right, so maybe what we can do is outline. So you made the decision for you and your family that this was a good place for you to go and to build and to be long term. So maybe we can outline what exactly that process looked like for you, and what that integration into an entirely different culture, and learning the language, and all that kind of was
learning,
like.
Yeah.
And then we can move into like some of the other people you've helped kind of through the same process.
Yeah. So we came as investors. We had the idea from the beginning that, and did research beforehand. It really helped that my wife was already an immigrant. She wanted to understand the system before we came here. She helped really put a lot of things in order, looking up how to apply for residency and what that was going to entail. We knew we were coming with a certain amount of money, and so we were going to purchase land and incorporate a business to apply for residency, that we wanted to be here 5 years minimum. And without doing what a lot of expats do, without making like kind of a commitment, they just do border runs. So you could stay without being so anchored per se, but,
so you always risk. Can you explain what that means? Border run meaning stay for a few months and then
exactly. You get a 3-month visa when you walk in the door, and you can easily just go down to Costa Rica, cross the border, and come back.
Okay,
it's a day of travel. It's some fees on either side. It's not really that intrusive, but I have met people who've stayed here for 10 years and done that for 10 years worth of time, and that expense is not worth it.
Right.
That risk that you've developed something here, you've built a house or what have you, you could just get the wrong border agent on the wrong day and says, why do you just have Nicaragua, Costa Rica stamps in here? We're not going to let you in anymore.
Yeah.
And it has happened. You don't see it too often, but you run a risk. Certainly, you leave yourself a little bit more susceptible. Mm-hmm. It's nice to be resident in terms of dealing with things for the other bureaucracy that exists here.
Right.
So
you wanted to apply, to go full residency. Yeah. And
we knew we were going to be making a purchase. We had ideas about maybe doing a small hotel or a yoga retreat kind of venue. My wife is a teacher. We came down with a pretty open mind and knew that we'd probably be in process for over a year of buying, developing our own property, mm-hmm. maybe even looking for our own property. So we did. We came down. We moved a lot quicker than expected. We found our property pretty quickly and had an offer in. It took another about 8 or 9 months to build our home.
Okay.
From there, we built 2 rental units right away.
Okay.
And they're dual purpose. They're for rentals, short and long term, and as well, it was to serve as kind of a retreat center thing.
Mm-hmm.
So when you say build, like you were building this
thing.
We
built it from the ground up. We moved into like a swatch of jungle. You've seen it. It was just all overgrown indigenous trees. We cleared out what we needed to. We left as many green spots as we could. And here, because we're in a seismic area, we did all a concrete and rebar construction.
Okay.
I had construction experience and various trade experience as well, but not working in concrete in this way.
Right.
Really, when they started at first, and I'm there on a daily basis checking the plans and learning the process, man, it looked to me like we were going to put up a skyscraper. You know, huge concrete footers in the ground with columns coming up. That's what we're used to seeing in the States that's getting built out of concrete.
Right.
So it's pretty revealing, a huge learning curve for me for the language as well. I had many years of Spanish 101 through high school and working in kitchens, but never the practical daily application.
Right.
So...
Right.
6 years into it, I'm all right. I'm doing okay with my Spanish. You know, it's pretty good.
Yeah, man.
That's something that I think is fascinating. That moving into a different country, even construction techniques, all like everything is going to be different from the ground up.
Yeah.
So in that process, what were some of the major obstacles that you had to overcome? There was a skill level and adaptation.
There's so many adaptations. I mean, you know, you're coming with kind of Western sensibilities. You're applying what you know from trade work or from whatever. You're expecting guys to work at a certain interval, perhaps, or clarity in what's going to happen in the design process or how it's going to be organized.
Mm-hmm.
That might as well just throw all that shit out the window, man. I mean, it's totally different. And I got, I got extremely lucky meeting nice people here who had built, recommended people to me that said you can trust them.
Mm-hmm.
And I have been able to. And to this day, I still work with the same contractor. Now we work hand in hand. We have an extremely good rapport. We consult each other on projects. And luckily, together, we're able to keep growing. And we've had up and down years, and now we're on a good upswing again, and the projects look very solid for the coming year. So very lucky to have been introduced to somebody. I have not had that rumored experience of, you give the contractor the money and they disappear kind of thing. It's not really that culture here, but contractors around the world, I think, are like that. You take a big risk and you put a lot of faith in what I've seen. People connect here. Gringos, expats come here. They connect to the story that the locals have.
Mm-hmm.
They're the first ones to often admit, like, they are poor. They come from a poor culture and poor society. Mm-hmm. Impoverished, I should say. Mm-hmm. And there's always that person who's willing to take advantage of that, make that connection. And right. when you hand over the money, something right. goes awry. Oh, something got lost. Something didn't make it. They disappear altogether.
Right.
That being said, it's not the common practice that you find.
Right. But it definitely, having that personal relationship with someone who has been vetted, has established a reputation
yeah.
in the community is invaluable, I imagine.
Like, absolutely. Yeah. And even I experience that in the sense now for myself is that I've been here 6 years. We've done several projects. People know that I'm here. They know that I'm not leaving, that there's mm-hmm. not wheels right. on the cart, you know. So right. it's much easier to get work done and to get people behind the projects, to get people on board with the reality of the working here, too. Of mm-hmm. Let's not rush. Yeah, I know you want to be in a house right away, but mm-hmm. we need time. Mm-hmm. We need to move at the pace that the country affords.
Right, right. So one of the things that we are really interested in as Bitcoiners, and we're looking at new communities to invest in, to be a part of, and to build a long-term presence in, mm-hmm. And also just thinking about like how the kind of home we want to mm-hmm. Develop. A lot of us have, you know, this fantasy of having a citadel, like a castle type structure on a mountain with plenty of tracts of land, you know, around where we're growing our own beef and yeah. have complete like wealth full of natural resources that we can rely on at any given time for yeah. like on into perpetuity, and something that we can hand down to our children, even right?
Yeah.
So that's all like in our fantasy land of like mm-hmm. this is the citadelium. This is where we want to reside. Where, you know, the land of fruit and honey, and you know, there's complete abundance and complete security. Mm-hmm. But we recognize, of course, that that's very unrealistic. That you're going to have trade offs. There's no particular perfect place to be,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So. But one of the things that struck me about your guys' property and some of the other developments that we've seen is just the tremendous ability for the land to produce. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're walking through your yard and it's a food forest, like fully developed, mm-hmm. where you can pull things off the trees and eat it. And there's animals like chickens and mm-hmm. Ability for goats and...
Yeah.
All kinds of different ways
to sustain
yourself. Yeah. So, what is that? Was that like a big draw for you in coming here, having that self-sustaining?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Ability?
Again, we were living in the city. We were living in Philadelphia, so we had no outdoor space. I had kind of lost my commune with nature. A big part of it, not just the surfing and the commune with water, was to just be back in nature. Was to have space. Mm-hmm. You know. Not that I didn't want any neighbors, but I wanted privacy again. Mm-hmm. I wanted to have my doors and windows open. I wanted trees. I wanted greenery back mm-hmm. in my life. My grandfather had an amazing garden my whole life growing up. Mm-hmm. Shavila's parents, too, they planted a winter and a summer garden mm-hmm. to sustain themselves through the harshness of the Lithuanian climate. That was very attractive to me, and it continues to manifest here, as you know, like maybe with adding a little bit of like farm responsibility to the properties we're managing and taking responsibility for. Mm-hmm. Having our own control over our food sources and our what we're making, what we're producing is really important.
Right. I remember, like, you were telling us the other day that you barely noticed the cost of eggs going up because you guys haven't had to buy them at the store.
Yeah, yeah, it's a little thing, but it adds to the effect of being here. I mean,
right.
I am not a retiree, so I still need to make a living here. There's a number of different ways to make a living here, but it's not, none of them are easy. Making your money abroad, being a retiree, is a totally different feel and scope of life here. So if you're coming to take part in tourism, it's a different hustle. You maybe don't have time to have chickens and a little working farm going because you're on that, those rounds, recorrido, we say, like doing the track with the clients, with the guests. But I was looking for a different pace at that point. I'd been in the service industry for a long time. I knew I didn't want to do that full bore with running a hotel or a hostel kind of thing. What I was going to do, I wasn't sure when I got here. It revealed itself. You should come with a skill. You know, you're in an expat community, so people are always looking for something new and or a new twist on what's here. So come with a skill if you need to support yourself off of the local economy. If you come with a rigid view of that skill, if you have to make a certain kind of grilled cheese sandwich and you can't fulfill those requirements here, and you're rigid about it, you're going to fail, because you'll drive yourself crazy trying to get other people to bend to your will. You go as an expat, you need to be very flexible.
100%.
100%.
Yeah. So one other option, you know, I imagine there would be different types of people who move here, right? There would be one who's retired, doesn't need any kind of income to sustain themselves throughout their life. There would be one maybe who works digitally, and they want, they have a virtual connect. All they need is a connection to the internet, and they have their business, they have their full-time job or whatever, but it's fully remote. So that could potentially work really well in a place like this, where although internet may be little questionable, there are limitations
for sure. There's definitely challenges here with that, but I give the response when people solicit from us for longer term rentals. I used to teach online. That was something I filled the gaps with in between projects before we had the baby. I was teaching Chinese kids English, getting up at 3:30 in the morning and teaching from 4 to 6. They're like 30-minute classes. But I could log in and I could do live video feed with kids in Beijing. So, and you can work here. Sometimes there's storms, sometimes the power's out. If you have to get set up, you can get a backup generator or a battery backup system. And the internet is getting better and better. The longer you're here, you figure out which companies work better than others, who will give you a good price on having quality internet connection. There's fiber optic coming finally now, so things are getting a little bit more stabilized. Those that are looking to work abroad are the people that we're seeing the most of right now. Families in particular that are maybe leaving the States or Europe or Canada and can work remote and want to stay somewhere for 6-month interval. And that's pretty much their only requirement, is that it's stable power and internet.
So one of the other questions that I have, as I'm assessing different places and kind of like thinking through what it would be like to live there and whether I want to like really invest the time and effort to build a presence there, one of the things that I ask is, like, what are the different threats, whether it be security, you know, crime in a particular area, whether it's weather dangers, hurricanes coming through, floods, there's all the nature, Mother Nature kind of forcing through. And, you know, California has earthquakes. There are very few places in the world where you have no risk of natural disasters.
Like you said, nothing's perfect. You know, Nicaragua is, it's an incredibly, like, beautiful and dynamic country, and it's incredibly, like, unstable. And I say that in the best possible way, in its environmental factors. Right? Okay. There's 7 active volcanoes in a chain of 19. It's in the Ring of Fire. It's a seismic area.
Yeah.
You've got the Caribbean on one side and the Pacific on the other. So we don't get hurricanes, but we get hurricanes on the Caribbean side, which influence flooding on this side because all of those rivers dump out in various points. We're at kind of the not the lowest point, but we're 150 kilometers from Costa Rica from the border there. So the land is kind of segueing down. Mm-hmm. And where we are has experienced significant flooding twice since we've been here. And that's flooding coming from the Atlantic side.
Right.
Environmentally, it's a very beautiful, very stable in the seasons. It's dry season, it's wet season. They each have their different challenges to them to navigate that. For say, the rivers are impassable where we are. There are rivers on both of our exits towards the main cities that at different rainy points of the year, they're not passable, maybe only for 8 hours. But heaven forbid you have an emergency of some kind. But it's the nature of being here. You take it all with a grain of salt, and if it's really important to you, you're really freaked out by it, you live on the other side of that. So you can get to Rivas, to the next biggest city. You make it part of your contingency plan. We had a friend who had a really bad cut on their foot during the storms that happened in 2020 when there was flooding. Nobody could leave because the rivers were impassable. I had a stitch kit. Other people chipped in bottles of alcohol and peroxide and bandages, and we finally found somebody with lidocaine so we could anesthetize it enough to stitch it up. And it was and she still had to go 3 days later when the river was low enough to have it all redone because it was really, really bad, the foot. But at least it was closed at that point. It was a debate. Should we close it up? Is it too dirty? But once she was anesthetized and it could be cleaned... But, you know, I mean, I was a new father at that point. It scared the shit out of me. Like, my mom was here visiting. She said, what would you do? I don't know yet. You know, I didn't know. We bought new stitch kits. We bought more lidocaine. We talk about, like, practicing. Get a little piece of pigskin and, you know what you got to do when you got to do it.
That's something that is, you know, where, like, survival and preparedness, you know, these are and self-reliance and all of these things, they're skills, right? They need to be practiced. They need, there are, like, you need the resources and items there for you when you need them, but you also need the skills and the ability to use them, right? So like, that's what's fascinating. Like, as I'm listening to you talk, I'm thinking that, like, living in a place like this will, like, this, it's more just a part of daily life to be in, to be prepared and to make sure that you have the proper precautions in place. Whereas, like, coming from a highly westernized civilization, you're not dependent on yourself for taking care of that stuff. You just rely on the hospitals and all the resources
the
being there when you need
place,
it.
And even the local systems that can help out that are good are not anywhere near our Western sensibilities of it. You know, I had stitches in my foot here, and I was shocked when I saw it at first. But all right, you know, it's got to be done. Like, clean up that blood off the ground and let's get this done. You know, so. You do. Yeah. You want to be prepared, and you want to have a good head on your shoulders. I say, like, in terms of taking responsibility for yourself for these things, because you're kind of on your own here. There's a good community, and people will help out, but you need to be able to take care of yourself when it's important, or when you're laid up, you have an illness, whatever it is.
Right. Awesome.
So you've helped numerous people come here, buy property, and build on that property, yeah, and develop their land. And wondering, like, what are some issues, kind of like we were talking about earlier, where, like, I come here, and I imagine it's easy for a newcomer to come and see all the beauty, yeah, surf the amazing waves with like perfect conditions, yeah, like 300 days out of the year. Mm. Like, for those of you who are surfers, there's offshore winds here 300 days out of the year, so you can imagine conditions are pretty much amazing all the time. All you're waiting for is swell and the tides to be right. And there's
in
gonna
7
be
months out of the year, we have the swells.
Right.
It's pretty phenomenal to live on such a dynamic stretch of ocean, yeah.
Right. So, like, being wide-eyed and, yeah, and really engaged and being like, oh, well, why not just buy, yeah, land here? Why not stay, yeah, you know? Yeah. What are some of the precautions? I know we've talked a little bit about,
yeah,
some of the things, but...
You know, it's managing expectations, for sure. You know, one of the good-natured way that people come down here and they want to help out, they want to be involved in the community... admittedly, that's really challenging to do. You can't just go into a community and give, right, or everybody's going to come with their hand out. You can't necessarily go in and start a project and expect that anybody cares or anybody is really, like, how does that benefit them?
Right.
You know, mm-hmm, be realistic about how you're going to help people, or empower people, I should say. Mm. Just like anywhere else, there's bureaucracy to navigate. You need to come in as a foreigner with a very good attitude about that, or you're going to run into stalemates, holdups that people, you know, it will sound like a negatively painted picture, but people will be happy to take your money to get you nowhere, to keep you going in a circle with filling out your forms or getting something done. Mm-hmm. It's like anywhere else. You need to have some connections. You need to know how to get it done. Mm-hmm. So people come in and are hot to trot, maybe even fluent Spanish speakers from Spain. And, man, they have a hell of a time, you know, getting everything done because they're pushing or they have an expectation that it should turn over and happen more quickly or happen at a better price.
Yeah.
And you can't just come in and expect to get everything that you see here and all the beauty and just
establish
it. Yeah, fill out the form.
I sent it in with the expedite fee.
Exactly, with the expedite fee. We paid one of those today, yeah. And don't forget, too, that this is a country that relies on import. So mm-hmm, it's cheap once you're here. It's not cheap to just set yourself up. To maybe land is still incredibly reasonable in comparison to what we know in the States or Europe, especially being this close to the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
I would say it's entirely affordable. Building, you'd be surprised by what it costs to get a quality product here. You can build much, much, much cheaper, but then you're going to spend the rest of your ownership fixing it. It's a constant here. People don't, they want to be here, but they don't really want to invest in it. To me, it struck me as overbuilding at first, so we cut some corners on little things, mm-hmm, and said, okay, well, that was a mistake. An mm-hmm owner that I met in Ometepe said to me one time, he had been here for more than 10 years, he said, you try to only do it once and just put it in correctly, do it as sound as possible so you don't have to redo it when the elements take mm-hmm it or it crumbles because you just didn't do all the steps.
Right, right.
So it's a nice, slow labor of love here. You want to build it right. You want to get yourself comfortable, whether that be a business or a home, your farm, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
Don't come in too hot to trot.
Right, right. So one other question that I imagine would be on my listeners' minds is, we did touch on this a little bit, but government involvement in people's lives. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we're seeing in a lot of the Western countries is just an overbearing presence of government and bureaucracy, wanting to manage and micromanage every part of the economy and every aspect of our lives, and want to know everything about us, right? And surveil and just all of this encroaching nonsense that's really worrying to us. So, you know, coming into Nicaragua, like, it's a completely different style of government than what many of us are used to. Mm-hmm. And so it comes with different trade-offs, right? Yeah. So maybe compare and contrast a little bit of, like, what that's like. Maybe it's different from place to place as well in Nicaragua.
I would say it's different for situation to situation, in terms of people or business, traveler, investor. You know, as we've talked about, people that are coming here now because they want more freedom from that oversight or from those mandates. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about a country that's fairly repressive in its press freedoms. Mm-hmm. It's a bit of an autocracy. Mm-hmm. But they didn't make anybody do anything in terms of this pandemic. People chose to take responsibility for it the way they wanted to. Mm-hmm. There's enough of a worldwide information feed that what we saw was that there were cases in Managua, in the capital. People saw sickness and death. So while the government said, there's nothing to worry about, go about your business, keep the economy running, nobody shut anything down. They just wore masks and sold rubbing alcohol. Mm-hmm. We were out of rubbing alcohol for a month or so, and then it came flooding back to the market. Mm-hmm. And private businesses and banks took people's temperatures and asked you to wear a mask, and everybody complied, and no big deal. And as soon as you go outside, you can take your mask off, and it's no big deal. Here, you saw this completely different thing where we are on the beach, where nobody took any precaution whatsoever. The town kind of slowly emptied out. More and more people that were stuck at first in March left because they were getting homesick or running out of money or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's very strange to me because I haven't been back to the West since all of this unfolded. And you feel really like shut out of the world if you're not participating at a certain level. Or I don't know what it's going to be like when I go back and need to contend with that. But here it was, you took the necessary steps that you felt needed to be taken, and that was it. In other ways, the government here can be a bit heavy-handed, but if you're not involved with the local governance, then it doesn't really affect you as a resident. I don't have the right to vote anyways.
Right.
I probably wouldn't even if I did. It doesn't really... There's no real encroachment.
Right.
There's a police presence that's, I think, par for the course. Central South American can be a little bit corrupt, but they're not nasty. Mm-hmm. They're maybe looking for like a couple hundred cord if they pull you over for a traffic violation. It's easier to give them a couple hundred cord than it is to lose your license and have it mailed back to you to pay some other fine.
Right.
So there's 100%. Like these little things that you have to navigate, but in a
or
lot
soda
of ways,
pop, right?
Yeah. Or give them a soda. You kick some cookies in your car to give the guy. You know, he's standing out in the sun. Of course, he wants something.
Simple enough.
There's some things that they can be a little annoying, but they're so easy to deal with, really, that if you have a good attitude about it, mostly you can really kind of laugh it off and enjoy it. And if you're not here, kind of like causing trouble anyways, then that stuff doesn't encroach on your life. It's not not in the daily then.
Right. Mm. Right. Yeah. Excellent.
Mm. Yeah.
So, I think that is like a great way. I think it's a good place for us to kind of like close things out. think that gives us a lot to kind of think about, and it's a great introduction to Nicaragua specifically and what the process is like and what are some things that we need to be thinking about if this is something that you're serious about. So if any of the listeners or we know of anyone who's interested in checking out Nicaragua and looking and kind of exploring it more as a potential option for them, how do they get in touch with you? They can always reach out to me and I can connect.
Yeah, by all means. I actually work now with a partner of mine from Magnific Rock Hotel. We run another business called Emerald Property Management. It's called The full name is Emerald Investment Nicaragua. We have a few divisions, one that includes the property management. Mm-hmm. And we do home building and rentals and everything. But through Emerald Investment Nicaragua, you can find me, Michael Skiles, and I'll be happy to tour you around, give you all the information you need, help you be successful here as an expat.
Excellent.
My wife's calling.
Michael, thanks so much.
So I'm going to answer it.
It's time to go.
Yeah.
Thanks so for with that, me. Yeah, thanks so much. With that, may you guys live a meaningful life and enjoy your freedom as a sovereign individual.
I like that sovereign individual.